This is The Dean's Desk with your host, Kurt Mueller, Dean of the Faculty of Communication, Art and Design, and the Faculty of Arts.
Welcome, everyone. I'm here today with Holly Cebulski, who is a public relations professional, also the coordinator of our Bachelor of Communications and Media program, and one-time co-star with Matt Damon. But we'll get to Holly's movie career a little bit later. Holly, welcome.
Thank you for having me. Matt was busy, so it'll just be me today.
That's okay. We'll get to Matt Damon a little bit later, but we've known each other for quite a while now, worked together early on one of my first projects when I came to Seneca. Let's start with your background and what brought you to Seneca. You had a really interesting career prior to stepping into the classroom here.
So I won't start with Matt Damon. I did work as a public relations professional, though, in the entertainment industry for many years. So I've worked at film studios. I've worked for record labels. I've had my own communications agency as well. So how did I end up at Seneca? Well, I actually always wanted to be a professor. I'm not saying that because I'm on a mic. It was my genuine ambition. And I was really fortunate while working as a practitioner in the industry, I started to guest speak, started to meet people. And our previous program coordinator, Jeff Roach, gave me my first shot. And I was just, you know, right place, right time. I count myself quite lucky to be here.
Yeah, we all miss Jeff. He was a bright light in the industry, but also at Seneca. So when you first came to teach, was it what you expected? You said you always wanted to do it. Did it surprise you in any way? What was that experience like?
Well, since we're talking about movies, if I'm being really honest, the idea of being a professor, I always wanted to be a film professor, thanks to Indiana Jones. I'm serious. I used to think it was so cool when I was a kid to watch how we could do something as a job and then go teach people. But I loved being a publicist. I adored working in the entertainment industry, and I really wanted to help students achieve those dreams and introduce that knowledge in the field. And when I got here, that's exactly what I got to do. And I remember when I was first starting out, I used to actually tell my students, I know it's 8 o'clock in the morning and it's bright and early, but this is the best job in the world. And I think I still believe that. I think that the work we do is really important, and I feel very lucky and excited to get to work with our students all the time.
How did your work as a publicist and in public relations inform your approach as a professor in the classroom?
Again, I keep using that term lucky, but Seneca prioritizes real world, authentic experiences. So working as a public relations professional, what I didn't want to do is just bring theory to the classroom. I wanted to teach the students how to actually do my job. And over the years, I've met students who wanted to do my exact job. That gave me a chance to create assignments and assessments, or even just discussions and case studies to demonstrate to them, look, if this is what you think the job is, let me show you what that job is and help inform your decision. And some students would say, okay, thank you, not for me. And other students would say, okay, fantastic, it's better than I thought. So I brought all of those years of experience to the classroom. I know we still have to explain why Matt Damon's my best friend, but it really gave me a chance to just sort of show them what their future could be and would be, not just in entertainment PR. I want to be really clear about that. I have worked in corporations and done executive training and done that as well. So it's about customizing what that student experience could look like professionally and bringing it to their classroom.
So speaking of that customization and creating that welcoming environment, I know you've been a leader in that sense. You actually put together a course in terms of creating an environment where students of different cultures and backgrounds could feel comfortable. Can you unpack that a little bit for us?
Oh, interesting. Yes. So that I was actually introduced to Amy Lynn, who's our director of the Teaching and Learning Department. And I have to give her full credit. In a chance meeting, our relationship grew, and she was just so open to my ideas. And the foundation of the class that you're mentioning is globalizing our classrooms, and it was for faculty members. And when I presented it to Amy, it was more of an informal conversation of, I see there's an opportunity here. You know, how we speak to our students and engage with our colleagues, and the foundation of the class became what we say and how we say it really matters. She was open to me developing that, and that led to a four-part series that students or faculty would take over 4 weeks. And we would explore interactions, and we would explore really important topics, recognize what we're saying, the impact to the recipient of that message. So I was taking those communication skills that I had and bring it back to relationships. And then how does that make people feel seen and heard, respected, and represented?
One of the things we talked about in that sense is how the same message can be interpreted completely differently by students from different backgrounds. And the topic of office hours.
Absolutely.
Is something that we've talked about. Can you talk about that?
That's such a perfect example. I'll say as faculty members or just as professionals in general, we have a knowledge base, we have an expertise. And sometimes we may speak in a way that we're assuming somebody understands what we mean. So office hours, and I will give credit, this wasn't my original idea. It was from a book, The Privileged Poor. But it really struck me when Dr. Anthony Jack had explored this idea of something that we say to students we think means, I'll help you. This is my office. Please come. It's an invitation. But that's an assumption. And many individuals, based on various levels of background, whether it's past academic experiences, like you mentioned, geographically, culturally, many students, when he conducted his research, realized quickly, they thought that meant that's your time to do your work. So while faculty may say something that they think, great, come to me, you know, I'm here for you, the message, if we're not checking in, is completely received differently and becomes almost problematic because then it becomes exclusive, doesn't it? Or you become maybe unapproachable, unavailable, because if you're constantly saying something like, come see me in my office hours, and students are thinking, but that's your time. It's almost as though you're announcing you're unavailable all of the time.
Yeah. My office hours is my time to do my work.
Right.
Don't bother me.
Exactly.
That's how some students are going to see that.
Exactly.
That invitation. Really interesting. I'm so glad you developed that course, which is an amazing, amazing course, by the way. So let's jump back a few years. One of my proudest accomplishments at Seneca is the launch, something that I worked on with you and lots of other faculty and lots of other support staff, the Bachelor of Communications and Media degree. Can you describe that degree, the soul of it, the gist of it, and why it means so much to you as a public relations professional in terms of preparing communicators for the future?
So when I joined Seneca a few years into my time in our community, I had a chair at the time. Forgive me, I'm sort of gathering my thoughts because I'm trying to think. It was such a long time ago when we started. She identified that there was a need in the market to help students be able to transform their skills and adapt to market change. You know, I describe it today as long gone are the days like, okay, I'm not going to age us, Kurt, but you know, when we started, maybe you started at a job like when I started at my film studio job. I thought, great. I'm set for life. Nothing else will need to happen. That's just not the reality of our communications or media industry. From that, as you mentioned, we collected a group of individuals from various backgrounds and levels of expertise to help design a degree that would inform our students about many aspects of the industry and empowering them with skills that will carry them through whatever changes may come. You know, public relations professionals become content creators and content creators want to become journalists, etc. So that's where that idea came from. And then, of course, you and I worked with a group of other individuals to sort of take it to the finish line. And I share your pride. It's definitely one of the most important bodies of work in my career. And I take it very seriously when it comes to this degree. And I say that because, you know, we just took our third intake of first years. It's so exciting to see them grow and it's seeing it come to life and their skills developing.
Mm. I know that one of the things we discussed early on, you and I and Martin Waxman, who was mm-hmm. really focused on this aspect of communications, is the influence of AI, which has just grown and grown and grown. How does that inform the degree, the course curriculum, and how you teach your students?
That's a great question. So the degree introduces the students to many areas of business, first from a generalized lens, and then it transitions into more specific courses, whether it might be content creation or organizational behavior. But we created a three-part series, the Scaffold Learning, to actually explore data literacy. Again, historically in our industry, if you receive the placement, you got that byline, you're winning. But that's not the case. So we want to empower our students to know how to use these tools and tell the story of their work and define and substantiate, quantify and qualify the strategies. And that's actually the third class there they start to take is exploring generative AI for communicators. And previously they take quantitative storytelling. So we have specific courses that explore AI, but in our classes themselves, we also use the tools, not as a foundational piece. We want the students first to learn the skills, but then we want to introduce them. Like in my persuasive communications class, first they write their own original speech, and then we put the same prompt into AI. The next assignment is let's compare and contrast. You know, what did AI suggest? What did you originally write? And spoiler alert, to date, 99% of my students always said that they wrote it better. So we have a lot of fun exploring these tools and recognizing how they're being used in industry, and we integrate them in all of our classes.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. We're here with Holly Cebulski, who is the coordinator of the Bachelor of Communications and Media program at Seneca. We'll get to the Matt Damon story in a few minutes, Holly. But you've been teaching for a while now, and now there are things like flex classrooms and other tools, AI, that are available to you. How has the nature of teaching changed since you started? And also, how, if the students have changed at all, what have you noticed in that respect?
Well, I think if I were to start with the classroom itself, of course, there's been a literal change, but then changes how we engage with our students. I'll use the language. It was a luxury, really, to see your students every single day. There was an opportunity to get to know them a little bit more intimately, learn about their lives, their stories, their careers. Those informal interactions help you develop a different type of relationship that both creates a safer space, I think, for them to explore, meaning when they're, you know, testing their limits and they have questions, they feel comfortable with you. So in this new space, and I always say it's sort of that post-pandemic world that we're navigating, I think it's a matter of just figuring out how to reach out to the students to achieve that same result. And I think we also have to recognize that, and this goes to your second part of the question, our students have changed. Students have very busy lives. We live in a world where people are navigating so many spaces. We also talk about lifelong learning. You know, you have mature students who are returning, you have children, you have parents who are supporting, you have full-time jobs. So I think it's recognizing maybe the needs of those students, what type of space that they wish to work in and collaborate and how they want to collaborate, knowing that you're always open, but at the same time, giving them that flexibility and opportunity to navigate the space that'll aid in their academic success and maybe not sort of creating a space where you've defined what that culture would look like.
Mm. I know you've talked about the importance of something as seemingly so small as pronouncing a student's name correctly.
Absolutely.
And what that can mean to a student in terms of creating that atmosphere.
It means everything, I think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So let's get to Matt Damon. So you told me a story when we first started working together. You were an ex. Well, I'll let you tell the story.
Oh, yeah. Oh, gosh, do I ever regret telling this story? See, you're too friendly and nice. And look what happened. So a million years ago in my past life, as I call it. So I want to preface by saying I never aspired to be in front of the camera. I always wanted to work in film and entertainment. I loved that space. That's why working as a public relations professional was just one of the greatest joys of my professional life. Having said that, I did for many years work as a model, and I'm remiss to say actress. I don't think I deserve that title. Having said that, I seem to be in the right space at the right time. So yes, one of my claims to fame is that I was an extra in the good film Good Will Hunting. At the time, that film was called Good Will to Arms. And if you want to hear the whole story, I was very upset. Robin Williams was not on set that day. And when I did the scene involves Matt Damon. It's just that we're in a dormitory. I was a teenager at the time, and I'm supposed to walk by him. So you see me in the clip. And I didn't know who he was. I didn't know he was the creator. I just thought he was some nice, cool guy. Matt Damon was there. Ben Affleck was there. And I didn't know till the film was released that they had written it and they were the lead actors. And I was watching Oprah with my mom and I said, oh, hey, remember that guy that I told you about? That's him. My mother was like, how do you not know who these people are? So I have a few stories like that from those days. I seem to always end up in bigger films. Maybe at the time we didn't know that they'd become such big films, but I was always, you know, that kid in the crowd or in the backseat. Yeah.
So if people are looking for the scene, that maybe hyperbole to call it a scene, but there is a frame or two there with you and Matt Damon in the same frame. So roughly where is that?
So for those who are listening, you can look it up on YouTube. It's the scene where Minnie Driver is playing the piano in her dorm. Cool fact about that, it was just a fake hallway built in a studio on Eastern Avenue. So there's an exterior shot that they shot in Boston. You think you're going into this really cool building. And then we just stood in the hallway, which was basically plywood. And he's walking towards her dorm room. And then myself and another girl walk in the other direction. I was very frustrated in every take but one. I made sure to turn my head and, you know, try to laugh so I was on camera. And it's the one take, of course, that I didn't show my face. So you kind of see my new cool haircut that I just got during Fashion Week in New York. But that's about the most that you'll see of me.
And you were in another quite a big movie, but it didn't make it to the final cut.
It didn't. So I was in Billy Madison, for those who are listening and are fans of Adam Sandler. And in that was shot actually in Toronto as well. And I want to say it was at Eastern Tech or Western Tech High School in the city. the scenes I was in, if you see, there's one scene where he dumps pudding on the bully's head. I'm right, like it's my elbow. I'm right there. And then there's another hallway scene where they get into this huge fight. And so we shot that so many different angles and times. And of course, the angle that I'm in where I'm right in the front cheering the fight on, yeah, I got cut. So you're going to have to take my word for it that I was in.
I'm sure it was an
in the
amazing
film.
Performance, Oscar worthy.
There you go. Thank you. Yes, I just chose to be at Seneca. I declined the Oscar and all of that fun stuff. Yes.
We have a group of our amazing School of Media students here running the board and doing all the tech for us. And as soon as you started talking about your film debut, their heads turned, they were paying extra attention. So
right.
Interesting stuff. Are there any things that you miss from those days, from your industry work?
Oh, that's such a great question. Well, you know, in a positive space, I would say when I tell my students why I'm a professor, it's actually for the same motivation. When I worked with musicians or filmmakers, I really believe in the magic of Hollywood. I believe in the magic of telling stories and having people seen. And to be a part of sharing those stories and promoting someone's dreams, that was always my favorite part. That's what made me excited. So when I would do those red carpet events, which I've done more than I can count, I just loved creating that exciting moment for, you know, that fan and that look on their face like, oh my gosh, I cannot believe that I'm meeting this person. And when I'm with students, I do find it's the same feeling. You know, I love those moments and I get them all the time because I've been here for, you know, over a decade. Students are saying, I got my dream job. Or just the other day, someone's like, oh, so-and-so had a baby. And like, they're telling me about their lives, but it's those steps towards building their lives. When I meet them and say they're fresh out of high school, it's exciting. I know I'm sort of reverting back to Seneca. You wanted to ask about the business, but it is the same professional purpose. I will say I miss some of the fun excitement of the stories I get to tell in the film industry and just finding those angles. I do miss that curiosity. Yeah, I would say I miss that a little bit. But again, you find that curiosity, you just explore it in other ways in your next career and your next chapter. Because I get to talk about it still all the time. We're talking about Matt Damon.
Right? That's right. Yeah, storytelling is always going to be at the core of what you do.
Exactly.
Right? I read today with the emergence of AI, and it's, I mean, this is the worst AI we'll ever see. Right?
Interesting.
So now it's sometimes difficult to tell what's an AI video and what's a real video. And the corollary to that may be that there will be more emphasis on the reputation of a particular media organization or journalistic organization that people can trust. When you can't trust anything, the places you can trust become even more important, right? I hope that happens as a former journalist, but
yes.
we'll see. Holly, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Thank you for the opportunity, for, you know, being interested and engaged with our team members. I think that that's a huge part of Seneca as well. So we do feel like part of a community, and I hope that our students feel that in the classroom with us as well. So thank you.
They certainly do. Holly Cebulski, who is the coordinator of the Bachelor of Communications and Media program.
You have been listening to The Dean's Desk with your host, Kurt Mueller, Dean of the Faculty of Communication, Art and Design, and the Faculty of Arts, produced by the Seneca Journalism students.